I think, you know, this, the idea of following your why is so important. What is it that drives you? Why are you in this business? And just always staying connected to that.
Welcome, my friend, to the Conversations for Financial Professionals podcast. I'm your host, Dominique Henderson. And as a veteran of the financial services industry, I was curious to find out why, despite all the good that financial professionals do, that the term financial advisor would normally clear the room at a dinner party. Why was this? And what was this gap between consumers and providers of financial services? In this podcast, I seek to close this gap by having forward-moving conversations to advance the profession of giving financial advice and providing tools to the next generation of financial professionals to serve their clients at the highest level. As providers, we have the awesome privilege of partnering with our future clients to help change family trees, normalize the creation of wealth, and help the industry as a whole do less harm and more good. In today's conversation, we spend time with Raquel Hinman, who is the owner of Hinman Financial Planning. She's a registered investment advisor, fee-only certified financial planner. And we cover navigating the difficulties of retaining good talent, one of my favorite subjects about the talent pipeline inside the financial services industry. We talk about the definition of talent and what challenges she's experienced with the talent search for her own firm, and some ways she suggests that aspiring financial professionals begin to shape their set of skills to serve the demands of consumers of financial services. We also go into things that need to change or stay the same with the financial services profession. There are so many things that if you were cooking up the perfect RIA meal, what ingredients would be included? And Raquel and I break these up and chop them up in bite-sized pieces for you to understand and enjoy. So without further ado, it's time to sit back and enjoy the conversation. Welcome to another episode of Conversations for Financial Professionals, where we are shaping the next generation of advice. And today we have Raquel Hinman. Raquel, you are an Erie, Colorado-based CFP and owner of Hinman Financial Planning, a fee-only registered investment advisor. You help clients navigate the financial and non-financial issues that accompany major life transitions, specializing in working with people who have inherited money, gone through a divorce, or are preparing to retire. You also help people anticipate changes in their finances and guide them in making the right financial choices to help them preserve and protect their wealth, all while honoring what is most important to them. In 1998, you earned your CFP after realizing early on in your career that helping people with money involved more than just crunching numbers. During that time, you've also had the privilege to work with both the wealthy and the middle class, inheritors, divorcees, corporate executives, and business owners. And you wanted to just do more with people in all aspects of their financial lives, which is the reason why you founded Hinman Financial Planning in 2015. Welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Great. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. I wanted to get on. I think we connected over LinkedIn originally. Then with the, you know, there's that list of the Investopedia's people, and then you found out about Jumpstart. After I think a Facebook message. So it's like these concentric circles kept on overlapping. I was like, we need to get her on the podcast.
Well, thanks. I'm glad to be part of it.
Let's talk about today, this navigating the difficulties of retaining talent. I think this is probably something that every good / successful advisors are going to have run across. Rather, you know, if you're just thinking about from the standpoint of, okay, what is my zone of genius? What am I like super good at? What do I love doing? What am I called to help my clients with? And then there's this stuff that you don't want to do that, you know, is like, it's part of the job. And at some point you're gonna have to outsource that, whether you decide to hire somebody or decide to, you know, however you decide to do it, it's got to be done. So I would like to talk about some of those challenges because of how we first met through Facebook when you posted a job. Let's start with definition of talent. What would Raquel say is the definition of talent?
Boy, where do I start with that one? You know, in terms of my firm, I think talent are, you know, obviously the people that are going to come in and help me do my job and help me serve clients and help me provide the best clients. So, and in talent, I really think of that as being the actual people in terms of employees, you know, so it's like, what can I outsource versus what can't I outsource? And what do I actually need somebody to do? And so, you know, I'm thinking of talent, I guess that's what I'm looking at.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think when we think about the talent pipeline and how that's being cultivated, I think that's why this is so, mm-hmm. such an interesting conversation, because I have a friend in the industry that went to a college, I think it was in 2019, 2020, and she was in a room full of people that did not even know that financial profession as a the financial planning profession existed. Like, that was a job you could do. You know, people have all these different terms around what we do. So I think it's a very interesting conversation, because of you start thinking about how does that narrative get cultivated so that we end up having somebody to hire when we grow, right? What are your thoughts around how that narrative is being cultivated currently in the industry?
Well, it's funny that you say that, because I'm actually a mentor at the University of Colorado Business School, and in particularly in that financial planning program. And they just started a financial planning program a few years ago. But even there, it's funny, I go and I do their little networking events and things like that, and everybody starts out thinking that, you know, the jobs are basically being an investment banker or being a broker in a big brokerage firm. And so at least there, one of the things they do is they have firms come in every year and talk and show the kids, if you will, the students, different careers. And I always make sure I go to represent the fee-only financial planning side. And as the kids learn about it, they're so excited and they're interested. And so I think, I guess in answer to your question, I think, you know, one of the parts is that I think the colleges and universities are doing a better job of having the financial planning programs and financial planning curriculum at the school. And I know at CU it's been a little bit slow to grow, but they're working on it. And I think that's a really helpful thing. Beyond that, it is tough and it's hard to get the word out there. I think once people learn about it, they're sold. It's kind of like finding religion. And they're really into it, but it is tough. I mean, because it sounds so great. It's like, just help people with their money problems and helping people with these things. And, you know, again, it's helping people and you get to solve problems for them and it feels really good. And you can also make a living at it. So once people learn about it, I think they're really excited.
Yeah, I agree. I haven't run across too many people that A, don't want to help others. Mm-hmm. And I think generally speaking, people, when they know about what we do, they view this as a serving profession. And I think that's what attracts mm-hmm. people to it. What specifically have been your challenges in maybe not just identifying talent, but just like, okay, so who's this going to be this next, you know, the proverbial bus on the seat that I'm going to be filling? Like, how do I figure that out? Like what have been your challenges in that regard?
Yeah. You know, well, I think one of the big challenges that I face is trying to find, I mean, really, like you said, the right person for that job. And so many people who are out there looking are looking for full-time work and they want to be an advisor. So they want to go and jump on the firm. And especially if small firms like mine, it's like, that could be an eventual career path, but that's not something that's going to happen overnight. And so for me, you know, at least at my firm, I'm very small. I have like 60 clients. I think I've got a little over $50 million in assets under management. I'm a little over $300,000 a year in revenues. And so I'm more than anything looking for part-time people who can really help me in working with my clients. And so I'm looking for fairly highly qualified people, but I'm usually hiring for part-time instead of full-time. So that's an issue I face. And the particular job at the time that I contacted you, I had somebody who was working for me. She was actually a woman who had little kids, and so she was part-time, but she had great skills. So she had her CFP, she had a CPA, so she could really step in and do some client work, and that was wonderful. She actually has left me now, and she's focusing full-time on actual tax practice. And so I was replacing her, and in part of replacing her, in the end, I started looking for somebody who could do the client side of more operational type work. So I'm going to be stepping a little bit more into the planning part and having this person do operations. But at the end of the day, it's trying to find that right mix of somebody who can come in, they have skills that are immediately transferable. And then, you know, really the most important thing is culture fit. So finding somebody who likes how I work with clients, who likes how I manage money, who likes my approach and philosophy in terms of financial planning, and really likes my clients. That's a really big deal.
I mean, this is going to be a weird question, but I think I have to ask it because career changers and aspiring financial professionals are out there and they're going, I could do that. Like, so what is the requirements for that? Like you said, this person had a CPA and CFP. Is that always the requirements? Is the credentials the requirements when we're talking about, you know, we can, let's zoom out a little bit, maybe not specifically what you would do for him in financial planning, because I know there's some nuance there, but generally speaking, you have these conversations with firm owners. I have these conversations. What is the psychographic or skill set that you're typically looking for?
Yeah. And I would say it varies depending on the type of firm. So a small firm like mine, we're looking for somebody who can come in and sort of a jack of all trades. But they need to be somebody who can come in and contribute pretty quickly. And so I definitely prefer people who have some life experience. You know, career changers are fine to me. They do need to have something they can bring to my firm, though, whether it's they've worked in the operations and they understand accounts and investments, or they understand something about taxes, or they understand something about financial planning. You know, for me, I was fine with people not actually having the CFP, but it's like, do you have some life experience that can translate? So I think that's really good. In terms of people coming, you know, straight out of college, I think a lot of times they're better suited to a larger firm that has more resources that they can dump into developing somebody. So, you know, I think there's differences depending on the type of firm, but definitely when I'm talking to colleagues and things like that, they are looking for people who can step in and make a difference pretty quickly. They don't have to know everything, but at least some of the basic skills, some life experience, you know, are they professional? Can they talk with somebody on the phone? You know, have just, again, basic life skills, are they a little bit mature, kind of that sort of thing. That's really important, and relate to the clients.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, and I'm going to see if you agree with this. Cause I, like, as I'm kind of just making a mental to-do list or checklist rather of these qualities, it's like, yes, can you resolve conflict? What is your bedside manner when you're talking to a client? I mean, this is a person that is paying their hard earned money to the firm. You may not be the rainmaker and started that relationship, but it, like, you know, it's like every client, you know, their situation, you brought that client relationship in, you want them to be treated with care, you know, and just having that professionalism there. The other thing that I like career changers to know, and I don't know that it's necessarily like, I'm not trying to like beat them up over the head of it. I just wanted to let them know the reality. It's like, the reality is, and you kept on saying this, but I'm saying it a different way. You said want people to come in, you know, quickly and be able to hit the ground running. Cause the reality is, when I bring you on, I have to stop activities that produce revenue. And so, and I have to pay you. So it's like, it's a negative ROI for like the first year. And so I like people to understand, like, you know, start thinking about it from the standpoint of not just having all the CFP planning, you know, modules down, because the reality is I'm probably not going to let you do a plan right now. Right. I want you to do other things that add value to me so that I can kind of step up and ascend. I know that was a pretty long list, but do you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree for the most part. I will say that for me, people come in and they get to start doing a lot of planning work pretty quickly. You know, I'll have them at least take information and learn how to put it in my software. They may not actually be creating scenarios and doing that kind of things. And I definitely want them sitting in on meetings, taking notes, helping with to-dos and follow-ups and things like that. So I think they're definitely exposed to the process, but I do agree. They need to have some sort of skills they can bring in right away. Just because you have the CFP in my mind doesn't make you more valuable. I want you to actually be able to apply some of that knowledge.
Unpack that. That's unpack important. That. Because I often talk about, don't go directly into CFP. Maybe go into the industry, see what you like, sample kind of like buffet style before COVID, and see what you like before you spend 2 years or more and $10,000 close to do the CFP. What are your thoughts around this?
Well, I do think you've got to have a CFP. I mean, when I was looking at it, I wouldn't even consider somebody who wasn't at least in the program studying for it. So, you know, I do want somebody to have it. I guess I'm just saying that just because you have it doesn't mean you can do planning. I mean, there's a difference there, and it's very practical application. So I want you to have gone through the curriculum or have done a lot of that, have made significant progress on it. But it's not like you have to have that. And again, I think there's demonstrable skills that are more important than actually having it. But I do think it's critical to have that. Now, I do think that some employers are willing to pay for it too. So, you know, bringing people in, it's like, yeah, I might be willing to help you pay for your tests or pay for some of your classes, because it is important to me that you have that skill in the job. I definitely pay for, you know, people do the training for their CE and, you know, anything like that. And just if they're going to be a member of my firm, then I'm going to pay for continuing ongoing training. That's part of what I do as their employer. So, yeah.
No, yeah. That's good. That's all good. I want to switch it up a little bit. We've had some, yeah. I won't call it differences of opinion, but definitely different ways that we, look at this and view things in the industry, which I think is really helpful and healthy, as long as you keep it in a non-contentious manner. All my friends, what are you thinking that when we're thinking about this narrative, of navigating the difficulties in retaining talent, and all the different issues we've just talked about, what are you seeing that this industry, and actually let me use a different term. I want to use a term that Margarita Chang used. She said profession. I want to distinguish between financial services industry, which is a very big umbrella, includes a lot of different types of professionals, versus the profession. So what do you feel that the profession has done well and like needs to kind of keep doing? And then maybe some things that it's not done so well, and we can, you know, kind of push that off to the curb and maybe think about some new ways of doing that. So two-part question.
Yeah. Well, it was funny because as you started to say that, one of the things I was thinking too is that, you know, I represent one very small part of this profession. So I am definitely on the fee-only financial planning side, and I happen to do investments, but I'm very financial planning focused. But, you know, in our industry overall, I think that it's such a sales-driven culture. And yeah, that's something that I just hate. And, you know, for me, I'm going more and more into the life planning side. So I'm getting more and more away from the idea of product pushing and things like that. And I still think that you see that, especially in the big wirehouses and institutions. And yeah. And
do you have a reason? What is your rationale behind why this still happens? I have my own thoughts, but I'm curious about what yours are.
Oh, I have a lot of thoughts about that as a former Merrill Lynch employee.
Okay. Fair enough. You unplugged from the matrix in a big way. Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it is, first of all, I just think that overall it's, you know, especially at those firms where they're publicly traded companies on their own, right? Like shareholder value at the end of the day is running everything. And so it's all about sales and, yeah, and I just don't, unfortunately, they don't care about doing the right thing for people unless doing the right thing for people happens to make them a lot of money. And so I think that's also why they're so slow to change. But, you know, I think on my side of the industry and what we're doing, it is much more innovative. And I think there is a lot more going on. But in terms of, you know, so I just think, you know, to answer your question, I think that one of the biggest problems in our industry is it's a sales-driven culture. And, you know, I've always looked at it as it's like, if I believe in what I'm doing and I'm doing the right thing for people, the money's going to come and the sales are going to come. So I do think very much it is a purpose-driven profession, at least the side of it that I'm in. And I think that's really important. But yeah, I mean, overall, I think that they pay people the wrong way. And even on my side of the industry, I think you see that. I think that, you know, everybody's in these silos where you've got your clients and they've got their clients. And even if you're at the same firm, a lot of times it's not clients in the firm. So it's, you know, competing against each other, which isn't necessarily a good thing, because then you're not helping each other. You're not helping each other learn and grow. You know, as a woman who was starting out in the industry, and I like started out as a young single woman and I got married and then I had kids and things like that. It's very hard to build or be who you need to be when it's a dog eat dog world. And so I do think, you know, some of the movement to maybe more of a salaried type, you know, positions and salaried advisors and things like that, I think is good because it allows people to be able to be in the industry who weren't otherwise.
It's funny you say that, because I wonder, like, how does that evolve? Because you would definitely have to have, I believe you would have to have more collaboration and more consolidation inside the firm. There couldn't be so many independent, like we can't have 10,000 independent advisors, you know, for every, you know, 100 square miles. We need to have some more collaboration. Right. We need to have bigger firms. that pull these assets together, allow for that type of depth in financial security that people would need, or at least that would warrant, you know, market value salaries in this profession. What are your thoughts around that?
Yeah, I think yes and no. I mean, on the one hand, I think, you know, at least how I am, I'm, again, a fee-only planner, and I'm part of NAPFA, and I'm part of FPA, and I'm part of XI Planning Network. And I feel like we are a very collegial group, and that we share all the time. And, you know, so many now are doing kind of niche practices where it's like, okay, if this person doesn't fit in my niche, I've got to find them somewhere else. And so I think there is quite a bit more sharing. And, you know, it's interesting because I think some of the stuff that Kissy's has been coming out with is, are you actually better off growing and becoming this big, huge firm, or are you better off staying small and working with higher and higher end clients? Yeah, and you can complain about that too, because then the people who are at the lower end socioeconomically aren't getting the same kind of service and the same needs met as everybody else.
What's the first step in becoming a successful financial professional? Well, doing your homework. And there's no better place to understand the financial services industry than Jumpstart University. With video after video of hours and hours of content on topics like the different careers available in financial services, advice for making the switch as a career changer, what to consider when becoming an independent financial professional, how to attract and retain new clients, what's involved in becoming a certified financial planner, and day in the life of a financial advisor, with so much more. All of this for free. You just got to click through the YouTube ads. So head on over to YouTube now to check out Jumpstart YO University. You can find that at youtube.com/JumpstartYO University. Now, let's get back to the conversation.
But I do think that you can have a good practice, and you can actually have a very premier practice if you stay small. So it's, you know, you've got to make a conscious choice around that. But I think it can happen.
Yeah, I don't know that there's a right or wrong answer. I do know that more of the career changers that I'm seeing nowadays that are looking for the stability of salaried work.
Yes.
And this could be just recency bias because that's what they just left, right? Mm-hmm. That could be that. Or it could be really, you know, the industry needs to move towards that in order to allow for, let's call it a more consistent delivery of what the client needs from a fiduciary standpoint, not just like you said earlier, hey, these are my clients over here. I got this revenue silo. I'm in the same firm as Johnny, but we kind of compete, you know, which is just kind of weird, if you will. So let's say it this way. If we were cooking up the perfect RIA meal, what would go into that? I think from what you said earlier, obviously it would probably be fee only.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Yeah, yes and no, because okay. I think I was the same person when I was a broker at Merrill Lynch as I am now. And so
Good point. Sometimes it drives me nuts.
And being fee-only right now, one of the things that drives me crazy is if I have a client that comes to me and they were sold annuities somewhere else, I can't always do anything with that. I mean, sometimes you can roll that into an annuity company that's a flat fee annuity, but sometimes it really makes sense for them to stay where they are. And I can't service, I mean, I can't even be listed as an advisor on those accounts. So, you know, in the end, I feel like just because I'm fee only actually keeps me from being able to service my clients as well as I could sometimes.
I'm glad you said that.
Yeah.
I'm glad you said that because there's this unnecessary debate that's happened in our industry for the last 10 to 15 years about fee-based versus fee only. And I'm like, are you serving the client in the best way you can? That's the real thing.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And so I really avoid those arguments because I think there's good people on both sides. And I see people on the fee-only side who charge these just what I think are exorbitant, crazy fees sometimes too. So I think there's abuse on both sides. And at the end of the day, I don't think that matters. But, you know, I think that everybody should be working in a fiduciary capacity. I do think that's important.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of career changers, I think it's tough because I think the hardest thing is if you want to be on the client side, if you don't come from the client side, I think that's very difficult. So, you know, I graduated from college, I started out working in the Merrill Lynch Service Center. I actually worked for Merrill Lynch two different times in my career. And I felt like when I went to that service center, I kind of got pigeonholed in operations and you're never really going to go beyond that. And I had to work really, really hard to get out of that because even at Merrill Lynch, I thought like, okay, if I ever wanted to become a broker, and this was what, 30 years ago or so, it's really hard to do that from the operational side. Like, there's just this stigma around that. And, you know, so I had to do a lot on my side to go to management and look for other opportunities. And then I eventually got them to let me get my Series 7 and different things. And then I ended up leaving and then went to another firm on the institutional side. And that's where I started studying for the CFP on my own. And because that was, you know, my thing. It's like, okay, if I want to actually be in front of clients someday, it's like you have to do it on your own. And I do. I think it's really hard to be a career changer. I think it's maybe easier now than it used to be. But, you know, and there are more salaried positions now than there used to be. But I do think it's hard. And I think so many people who are coming from the industry or whatever, but if they're a career changer, just breaking in, if you don't want to be an advisor and you don't have the financial backing to support yourself for a few years while you're trying to build a business, it is tough and it's difficult.
Yeah, so. Yeah, I agree. I don't disagree. This is the reason why what I do on the Jumpstart side is more mission-driven than anything. I mean, mm-hmm. I've always told people, just really candidly and transparently, is like, if I wanted to be rich, I just charge 1% and deal with my wealth management firm 100% of the time. It's an easy formula. I do feel like there's a need for more good advice. I obviously have a finite capability. Even if I decided to build mm-hmm. a huge firm, it's like only so many people mm-hmm. that I'm going to reach. So, I'm glad you said that. Let's go back to cooking this perfect RIA meal. Perfect in air quotes, everybody that's listening on the podcast. I'm just playing. So I want to know about two elements that are fairly new. Let's call them the last 10 so years in this profession. What are your thoughts around the coaching component and how you see that evolving in this narrative? Because that's an opportunity for jobs and positions. And then also therapy, financial therapy. Like right now, these are all mm-hmm. siloed. I haven't seen too many firms or RIAs that have all the continuums in there, all those different aspects. But what are your thoughts if we were cooking up the perfect RIA mm-hmm. meal? Would those be included in that?
Yeah, I think it's huge. And you know, at the end of the day, I think you've got to look at who you are as a person. And are you a person who is set up to deliver that in terms of what you like to do? Because I think there are people who just don't want to go there with clients. For me, I am definitely going more and more that direction. I'm actually in a graduate level class at Golden Gate right now in financial life planning. And so I'm heading more and more that direction. I've done a lot of volunteer work in mental health and behavioral health. So I feel like I have that kind of piece of it anyway. And when I work with clients, they're always like, oh, you're like half therapist, half advisor, which is kind of scary, kind of not. So I definitely think there's a place there for that. And I think more and more people these days recognize that there are issues with money and, you know, emotional issues around money. So I do think it's much more important. And I think a lot of this is the future. I mean, when you look at what are the things that can be outsourced or, you know, computerized, it's a lot of the investment management, even some of the financial planning can easily be done that way. The part that can't just be set up in the computer system is how do we work with you around your issues around money. So I do think those are some areas with big opportunities.
No, I would totally agree. I just think you know, when we're talking about 2021 in the middle of a global pandemic and mental mm-hmm. health and stress and all the things that go with this, and money has never gone away. It's still at the bedrock of all these people issues. I just wonder how important it is that as a financial professional, A, that you're healthy, and B, you're showing up your best version of yourself to help clients deal with their issues. And I just got to say, I think the CFP curriculum from my purview, especially notwithstanding the last little addition they made with behavioral finance, is just not there to help with mm-hmm. those type of things. They do not train you to deal with that. So it's like financial professionals need to go outside the scope of just financial planner or certified financial planner in order to serve their clients. Because I'm of the persuasion that people are going to show up at your front door like that, and you're going to have to find some way to deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. You know, it's interesting because that's one of the things we've talked about in this class that I'm in. And you know, the CFP is kind of your baseline. So when I first started in the industry, it was like your Series 7 was your baseline. You went out and you got that and you said you knew a little bit about money, you could start talking to people. And I feel like your CFP is your baseline. That is certainly not the last or the only thing that you should get in your career. One of the things that we talk about, though, is just it feels like you need to have experience doing financial planning and working with clients and working around money to really get to the point where you can be good at sort of that financial life planning, a lot of behavioral stuff. So, you know, I think there's a lot of tools and stuff that help you with that now. And you know, you can use some of the data point surveys or whatever it is you want to use. But I think there's something about being a more experienced advisor that gets you to the point of being able to do that. So, you know, when they talk about kind of the science and the art of planning, and I think that a lot of that emotional stuff, that's that art side. And you have to get good at the numbers to be able to really incorporate that art side, I feel like.
I would agree. There is definitely a, let's call it a maturity factor from a professional, maybe even a personal development standpoint too, because all that kind of layers, I believe, in on side each other. Okay. So, and then, so last but not least, I guess this would be the kind of like the roll or the side dish for this. What about career tracks? I know that's kind of hard to do at smaller firms, but you know, there are, you know, the Buckingham Partners, the Yeski Buies of the world. There's these different firms that actually have a career track. You come in as a junior, as an associate or whatever, and you kind of matriculate through to however high you want to go. What are your thoughts on that being, you know, part of the perfect RIA?
Yeah, I think that's great. And I think to the extent that RIAs can offer that, or that, you know, people coming into the industry can get into one of those paths, I think it's wonderful. Because, you know, again, there's all different types of clients and there's all different types of people out there. And so figuring out what is it that you like and what is it that you do well, you know, there's a lot of opportunity to do that. And so, you know, again, you might be the planner who really wants to get into that emotional and behavioral stuff. You might be somebody that's really just into the numbers. You might be the person who really, you know, geeks out on taxes, for lack of a better word. I mean, I was listening to some tax planning call the other day and I thought, oh my God, you know, these people, like, so much of it was so far over my head. And so I think there's a ton of opportunity for people to really get good in one area and specialize in one area. And I also think that during the course of your career, you may be at different points. I mean, when I had two little kids at home, I just wanted to go on to work every day, do my job and leave. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't handle a lot of really hardcore stuff. So I was really happy just being a staff person on a firm, like an account manager, basically a basic financial planner. As my kids got older, I had more time, I had more experience, and that was when I was ready to really open up my own firm and kind of take on the role as an asset gatherer as well as, I think depending on where you're at in your career and what's going on in life too, there's a lot of different roles that you can be in and you can work in. And, you know, beyond that, it's even like, so I tend to work with pretty wealthy people. Some people have a huge problem with wealthy people. If you do, you probably don't want to work at my firm. I mean, really, that's whether you're it's right. Young people, old people, or whatever it is. But I think it's really important to be honest with yourself about who are the kind of people that you like dealing with, and, you know, what kind of issues do they have? And are those issues that you want to be working around? And if not, then don't be there. I mean, same thing on the money side. Are you somebody who really believes in active management? If that's the case, then don't go work for a firm that does all index funds. I mean, you're not going to be happy there. So,
yeah. And instead of the CFP, you might want to think CFA or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
No, you're making some really good points. I think this is the reason why I tell people always start with your why, you know, especially career changers. There's a reason you're leaving the industry that you're in currently and, you know, starting over from a social and reputational capital standpoint. I mean, you might want to think about that a little bit, and because it's not going to be perfect. And I think the other thing to keep in mind, which you said this and it triggered a thought in my mind, is like, you know, take the time to sample and explore, because if you do this the right way, even as a second or even third career, you can still do this for a very long time. It's not like you're going to, you know, wear out your knees or something like that. You got this finite career like an athlete. You can literally do this, you know, as long as you want, I guess, as long as you're mentally competent. So,
yeah, absolutely. You know, and I have to say one thing in terms of, you know, the position I was just hiring for and the resumes I saw is, there were so many resumes where these people just look like so amazingly well qualified. And it was like, oh my gosh, like you're more qualified to work with my clients than I am. And so I felt like there was a little bit of inflation of skills on resumes. And one of the things I really wanted to know was like, especially in the cover, I think it's okay to say the things you don't know though. Like, you know, I have all these skills and I have all this, but you know, I really don't know, or I haven't applied this very much in real life, or these are the things that I don't feel like I know very well. Because as the employer, like, I just want somebody who can, you know, I want to know what holes you can fill and then what parts of you that I might need to develop. And so that was just an interesting observation that I had in just the hiring I recently did. And I feel like it's okay to be honest about what you don't know. Because I'd rather know and say, okay, then this is the stuff that we have to do than, you know, think that you have these certain skills, or, you know, you test for a job, you take one of those skill tests and it turns out you have holes in here. I think if you're honest about that up front, it will get you farther.
So I'm going to go ahead and extend this and hop down this rabbit trail that you just brought up, because I think this is so key. I'm of the persuasion that resumes are pretty dead. At least the notion around resumes and what they convey. I've always taught and coached my audience to go a step beyond. Yes, have a resume. Definitely. You got to have one. However, instead of just sending a resume, how about you send a Loom video, 60 to 90 seconds, quickly describing who you are, why you're interested in this firm, and maybe a little bit about Raquel's firm that you think is, you know, intriguing. Hey, Raquel, this is Dominique Henderson. I just ran across your profile, saw you on the Conversations for Financial Professionals podcast, and was really intrigued by some of the fee-only planning stuff that you talked about. I'm a career changer. Maybe you have time for a virtual coffee in the next 2 weeks so I can kind of discuss some of the points in my resume and see if I could be a fit for your firm. Like, that doesn't take that long to do, but I'm just thinking that if you got, you know, those versus just, you know, resumes, you probably follow up with those.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say it's okay to reach out to firms when they're not hiring too, because I'll tell you, like, I actually have more time to talk to people when I'm not hiring. And for me, like, everybody that reached out to me over the last couple of years, I have a little folder in my email inbox and I put them in there. And when it came time to me for me to hire, they were the first people I went out to. It's like, are you still, you know, are you, what's going on with you these days? Are you looking for a job? Because it was going to save me the time of having to put something out there on Simply Power Planner or whatever. So definitely. And I think reaching out to firms and asking for informational interviews is a good one too. I'm just trying to learn the industry, learn what it's like. But I love the idea of a Loom video. I mean, that would be so much better than just reading a resume.
Very good.
Yeah.
Well, as we bring this in for a landing, what do you think are the challenges? Like, what would you say the top challenges, if you were just kind of summing this all up, the cliff notes of this conversation, what do you think are the greatest challenges that firm owners are going to see, let's call it in the next 10 years, when they're trying to look for talent in this profession?
You know, from my standpoint, I think there's a lot of competition with the bigger firms. The bigger firms are just gobbling everybody up. So for me to find good people, I think that's a little tough. You know, what I offer is flexibility. I actually offer pretty good pay. But I think that's a hard one. It's just that piece of it. You know, in terms of just challenges I face overall that if somebody can help me with, it's great, is there's just more and more work all the time, it feels like. And so what am I going to outsource versus what do I keep inside? Having somebody just to help support me in staying on top of everything, I find that running a firm is fairly overwhelming at times. And, you know, I only have 60 clients, so...
No, it's tough. It's almost like building that second brain. Tiago Forte talks about this in Forte Labs, and it's like, you know, man, you know, sometimes I think about what you just said, and it can be pretty overwhelming when you start to think about what you've created. Yeah, you can pat yourself on the back, but then you still got the obligation to deliver on what people signed up for, and that can be, it can be daunting.
Yes. And you know, and keeping track of all the technology out there, you know, there's a part of me that just wants to go hire somebody who's 25 years old and wants to study technology all the time, because I feel like it's changing so much. And I, you know, really got to know what I've gotten to know. And now it's like, well, what is out there that I haven't even studied? And, you know, I don't know what's going on. And trying to just stay on top of what's best for the clients all the time is really difficult.
Yeah, so. No, I totally agree with you. I 100% agree with you. Well, as you know, this is a podcast to empower tomorrow's financial professional with tools that will allow them to serve their clients at the next level. With that being said, what word or words of wisdom would you like to leave with them today?
Oh, boy. I don't know. I think What is it that drives you? Why are you in this business? I'm just always staying connected to that.
Yeah, the why is huge. I think it's a very, very small word, but it means so much if you can unpack it, because it's going to overflow into every relationship you have with each client.
Yes. Yes.
And to be really solid on it, whether you're in the rainmaker spot or the support spot or wherever you are, I think it's just so much better to be in tune with that. It probably builds some type of confidence too. I think that mm-hmm. confidence is transferable to the clients. They see that you are enthused, that you love what you do. There's a reason why you do it. You have a story behind it. I think all that stuff is important. So I'm glad you said that.
Well, thank you. And it's your integrity, and it's also the part that fits into your personal life. You spend way too much time at work for it to not be something that integrates with your personal life.
It
helps you find your way back and forth.
Cool. Raquel, thank you. So much wisdom in this conversation. I really appreciate you for taking this time and for making this deposit into the audience. And I wish you nothing but success in 2022.
Thanks. You too. Good luck.
Thank you. Bye-bye. I really hope you enjoy this conversation. Before we go, just a few things. The best way to retain what you just learned is to do more than just listen. You first might want to write down your most important takeaway and then give yourself a deadline to apply it. For bonus points, you might also let someone hold you accountable to that deadline. And remember, the only way more people will know about this podcast is if you share it. You can do that by sharing a link to this episode on your social media or by leaving a review on iTunes so that it reaches a wider audience. I'd appreciate if you took the time to do either or both. And finally, if you'd like to learn more about how Jumpstart can help you become a next generation financial professional, or partner with you in finding next generation talent for your organization, send us an email at hello@jumpstartcoachinglab.com, just in case you needed to get a pen to write that down. That's hello@jumpstartcoachinglab.com. Bye for now, until our next conversation.